And we are live. Welcome to an episode of Roasting Marshmallows. My name is Rolf Suit, and I am your host. There's a game called Among Us, and it's all about finding the imposter and throwing it out of the spaceship. And when you play as an imposter, your job is to sabotage the ship and kill your crewmates. Playing as either role, like a crewmate or an imposter, is pretty fun, but it's a little bit more exciting when you get to play as the imposter. While being an imposter in a video game is all good fun, in real life, many people feel like an imposter at their job, and that is no fun. They fear that others will find out about them, that they are incompetent, that they achieve their success through sheer luck, and there's always a little voice in their head saying that one day everyone will find out that they are useless. As a consultant being hired for our expertise, we sometimes also experience imposter syndrome. Can we help this client? And what if our help isn't good enough? Or what if we just, fail? So today we are roasting marshmallows around a campfire, sharing stories of our imposter syndrome and how we deal with it. And I'm joined today by three of my colleagues. Sylvester, welcome.
Hi, man. Thanks.
Pache, welcome.
Thank you, Rolf.
And Arno, welcome, man. Are you,
hey, man.
Are you here? You're here. Nice.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm
yeah,
here.
Cool. So, yeah, I definitely feel like an imposter from time to time. But I first want to, hear from you guys if you share the feeling, or are you guys, like, fully confident in your abilities and always are, ready to go rock and roll, basically. So, Sylvester,
I would say every time you try something new, you feel like, okay, people buying this, am I doing it right? Or when will they discover I've never done this before? Yeah. So it's a pretty familiar thing for me at least.
All right, yeah. Punchy, what about you?
Yeah, I think it's sort of a daily struggle sometimes.
Daily, even?
Oh, yes.
Let's say a couple of days ago, our colleague Enrique, he asked me something about social workers he needs help with. And I have experience with social workers, but he said, I need help with it. I was like, will I be able to help him? What if I don't know what he needs help with? And then we end up talking, and I'm like, and after two sentences, he's like, oh man, this was immensely useful to me. It's like, oh, all right, good.
So you go from negative emotions to positive ones real quick, I guess.
And I mean, over the years, it depends also the domain that you're in, gain experience with. But it's there, definitely.
Yeah. And Anna, what about you?
Yeah, I do share the experience.
Yeah.
And I agree, it's usually when there's something new on the board.
And is it for you guys something that, is just like, a little bit of excitement? Or do you guys like actually lose sleep over it sometimes? Like, does it actually mentally block you from doing actual work or finding a good night's sleep or in being at ease?
No, not anymore at least. I know I've had that in the past sometimes. It's very big things, but... Yeah.
Now it's, and how did that like, manifest? Did you were really stressed out and stuff, or was it just like trouble sleeping?
I remember, for instance, when you start a new assignment.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, it was always very exciting, especially if you got there as the actual consultant.
Yeah.
So you had to fix something. I think a good example is actually at some point at a company. I think it's around 10 years ago or something. I wanted to accelerate how the teams were delivering, so I proposed to do trunk-based development and continuous deployment.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually held a presentation why this was a good idea, yada yada, and it got a lot of flack, of course, and the usual criticism comes with it, but then people actually started doing it. But while doing that presentation, I had actually never done that myself, not in that way.
Right.
So I was just there like, this sounds like a good idea. So that's when you get a bit of a...
So, were you able to cope with the pushback then? Because you are insecure at that point, I would say. How far do you go? Because some people could be pretty rigid. Did you actually go real deep down? Like,
I I'm not sure if those people listen, but I'm pretty sure they will recognize themselves if they are. One person actually got very angry and he walked to the CTO. Yeah, this is never going to work. Yeah, yeah, that. But the rest decided to try it. And yeah, a few days later, things started to make sense more. Mm-hmm. It came together.
And then even when the success came, did you still think, or still worry about, like, oh man, if these guys are, you know, doing this for like another week, like it's all going to blow up?
Well, not to say another week, but what happens in a year?
Right, yeah.
Long-term consequences. At some point, you're going, okay, this is actually getting better, quality is increasing. Mm-hmm. But it's a bit of a gamble, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it have to do, for me, that then the question is here, you know, this imposter syndrome, how much does it have to do with self-confidence? Do people who have very high confidence experience this?
Maybe, or yes and no. There's this graph, right? So your expert level. So at first you think, oh, I know nothing. Then you think, oh, I know everything. And then you figure out there's actually not a lot you know. So, and at some point you hit the expert curve. I think every downturn, you experience this feeling. So and at the peak, yeah, you're probably confident. You know everything.
Yeah, but to me, one of the things is, like, now what has changed for me over the years is... I think my confidence in actually knowing that things are going to work out is pretty high. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you've gone through so much different stuff that you thought, oh, this is impossible. What have we gotten ourselves into? And in the end, it works out. So yeah. that confidence is still there. But in the beginning, it always feels like, oh, is this the moment that it actually doesn't work out?
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a little bit different, though, in my eyes, right? Because then you're in the beginning of something and you have a lot of uncertainties, but the imposter syndrome also applies to people who have, you know, everything is in order, like, you know, everything is smooth at work and, you know, achieving success and making a lot of money. And then still there's that voice in their head that says, like, you know, you better watch out, you know, because they'll find out about you. And then, you know, the ship is going to sink. So, but you guys always feel like, you know, the beginning is a little bit exciting. And then once everything falls into place, like all of those feelings just fade away for you.
For a big part, they fade away. And then I start missing them because I myself become sometimes start acting recklessly, let's say. So I kind of...
How does it manifest?
Sorry? How does it manifest?
How does it manifest being reckless?
I kind of don't care as much as I cared in the beginning.
Yeah, okay. Right. So the perfectionism goes away a bit. Doesn't need to be great anymore.
I don't know. It's perfectionism. I think it's once. So for instance, if I have like a complex issue to resolve, and in the beginning it's very exciting to find the way through it, and once I figure out the way through it, I lose interest in actually sometimes seeing it through to the end. It's like, oh, I know this, right? So and then I miss. Sometimes I miss that. Sense of the unknown, of the risk, of the...
Yeah, but then you go into boredom a little bit or not.
Yes.
Like it just seems like something you did already.
Yeah.
So would you say that you're self-sabotaging yourself, where you're just like throwing a wrench in your own cogwheels just to some chaos to fix?
Oh, you can say definitely that. I don't think it's a very conscious thing that we do, and I think a lot of us do it.
Right.
And just being, I think I've been more aware and analyzing myself that, oh, maybe that's not the most constructive behavior that I'm doing. So, from that perspective... Go ahead, Arno. You wanted to ask.
You mentioned you see us doing it as well. So you have some examples about us, I guess.
Oh, sorry. Can you speak closer to your microphone?
Oh, sorry. Oh, you mentioned you saw us doing it as well. So I wonder where did you see that? Like throwing our own branch in the cops. Guys,
I think all of us do it. And it doesn't necessarily need beings, to be...
It's exciting to do something new.
Yeah. Yeah. So some chaos is needed to have some fun, but yeah, better not be a destructive.
No. Yeah, yeah. And like, do you find also experience, like, let's... Yeah.
Oh, do you guys find this imposter syndrome useful?
So for me, not really. Not really, no.
Because say your story, Rob, because you asked us, but I feel there's more to this from your end as well.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I definitely experienced the imposter syndrome because, you know, we see a lot of clients and every client has a new set of challenges. And every time I doubt, like, because I've, you know, probably haven't seen those before or like the landscape is different. So it's always like, oh, my God, you know, I hope I can help these guys. And they're hiring me for a certain set of expertise. But like, will I live up to the expectations? I guess that's like the biggest worry and fear that I have. And, you know, usually it works out. But every time, man, it yeah, it's the same thing.
Do you even know what the expectation is?
No. So that's something you put into your own head, right? Like, oh, man, these guys are hiring me. So they, you know, they're assuming that I'm the expert and that like from day one I can do stuff there. Well, usually that's just not how it works. And then, yeah, it worries me for sure. And then, I definitely sometimes have to fear, like, what if they find out that I'm, you know, not doing like the work that I think I should be doing. Whereas, you know, they might be super happy with the work I'm doing, but it always feels I can do more, you know, I can do better.
Yeah.
Yes. But I guess that's also
the part
related to the perfectionism.
Well, I don't know if it's related to perfectionism. I think it's mostly related that we know our deepest flaws and we know constantly we don't live up to our potential. And this is where this is coming from. But we don't know other people's flaws. So we tend to perceive other people as higher up on the pedestal than us. So you keep yourself, oh, can I live up to that? While that same person that you are looking up to is having almost the identical thoughts themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do they? Does everyone have those thoughts?
Well, I guess at least the people you want to work with.
So, and I guess confidence is related, right? Because I think Punchy already mentioned something about self-confidence. But do you guys think, because like I'm not self-confident sometimes, but do you guys think that there are people out there who are, you know, always confident in themselves and like never have these feelings of self-doubt? Because like to me that's unimaginable, right? But there has to be someone out there who's like, yeah man, I'm gonna do this, no problem.
Oh, you never know from the outside, right? You cannot see the inner demons people have. But I do this sometimes. You meet people that have like a certain calmness over them.
Yeah.
And I always perceive them like, oh, those guys are like
super confident.
There it.
Nothing. Yeah. Nothing can break their.
It's on the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's.
I think everyone has these feelings. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think everyone has these feelings. If you don't, then basically you don't care how. Well, maybe a bit of a black and white translation, but I'm good with that. Basically, you wouldn't care about what other people think of you, of your quality of your work, or whatever.
Well, should you care?
Should you care?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
Okay.
The question is: should you not care?
I know.
No.
Well, if you are hired for a job, then they expect you to deliver something valuable, right? But
yeah.
For you personally, should you really care what other people think of you?
I like that. Yeah, I think you do. Because, well, like Panzer said, it brings the best out of you. And also, if you don't, I think you become kind of like this, maniac or something. If you don't care about what other people think or do or perceive you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe care is not the greatest word, but should it bother you that much?
That's different.
Well, I think you need, that's different. You need to realize that everyone has these feelings.
Yeah.
And I think most important is who these people are. Who are the people that your opinion should matter? Everybody on Twitter? Probably not. Your immediate family? Maybe you should care whether they what they think about your actions. Maybe. Is the way your immediate family acts towards you useful for you, constructive? Maybe you should care. Is it destructive? Maybe you shouldn't. Your colleagues, is it a toxic environment that you work in? Maybe you should change it. So it kind of depends whose opinions you should... And that's, I think, probably the most difficult thing to do. Like filter who should you listen to and who shouldn't. Because getting feedback from the environment that you operate in is the only way that you can move forward.
But like, if we talk about feedback, because, you know, sometimes you might get positive feedback, but you're also going to get constructive criticism, right, as feedback. And if you are already suffering a little bit from, like, self-doubt and perfectionism, how do you handle constructive feedback? Because, like, maybe some people take it super negative and, like, it reaffirms their feelings of I'm not good enough. How should you take it?
Don't ask for it. Sorry.
How you should take it? Well, the same thing as before. Who am I getting this criticism from? Is it somebody who I value their opinion? Is their opinion at all affecting my life or not?
Let's say a direct colleague at a client.
A colleague at a client. All right.
Yeah.
What is the Does the opinion of this person actually matter to me or not? It's like,
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So let's say it directly impacts your daily work. This guy is give, or a woman, whatever, this person is criticizing your work, and you're suffering from imposter syndrome. And the guy or the girl doesn't mean it in ill will or to, like, belittle you, but just like, hey, I saw you did this, and it could be better if you do it this and that way. But then it might make your own feelings towards yourself about your inadequacies even worse, right? So you need to be able to cope and to be able to absorb that kind of criticism.
Yeah, the only way you do that is like, yeah, suck it up.
That's your advice.
So the thing is, look, you need to first figure out, is this an isolated incident or other people are... other people as part of the team, let's say, are observing the same. And if it's one thing, one incident, maybe I wouldn't bother with it. But if it's like three people tell me the same thing, it's like, oh, maybe I should do something about it.
Right.
And that's what I mean by sucking it up. And sometimes you're like, yeah, negative emotions are there for a reason. Like, they are there to help you, you know, adjust some of your behavior that maybe is not... In accordance with the environment that you work in.
Right.
Yeah.
If it's about your work, you could also see it as a chance to improve. There might be something to what they're saying. And if they're saying it in a way that you can't deal with it, well, maybe point them to a book like Radical Candor or something. How do you actually do this?
The point I'm trying to make is that it might make your imposter syndrome even worse. Right. Whereas the point is to be able to deal with it and to be the best person you can be.
So what is the negative? What is the consequence of having an imposter syndrome? The way that translates to me. Okay, go ahead, Arno. I'll say the last.
I think you're over preparing. You know, you're dismissing positive feedback, for example. You're not feeling adequate enough. Okay. Stuff like that.
It can lead to burnout, right? Where you're just like feeling like you're walking on your toes all the time, and you know, having to really watch out. And I think it definitely gets people to call in sick
or work 80 hours.
Or just indeed.
Well, is that really an imposter syndrome then?
Well, it's an effect, a symptom, because you want to do perfect, right? You're the perfectionist, and you want to show people that you can actually meet their expectations or your own expectation, whatever that means, and then go all in.
Well, I mean,
it also reduces probably your self-esteem, where you're just like, you don't really feel positive about yourself. And I think that's, you know, regardless of the work you're doing, like if you don't have a good self-esteem, I think it's a bad thing. It could be very stressful.
Could be. But I mean, like, so we mentioned, we're kind of convoluting here a few things. I hear words thrown is like perfectionism. I hear words thrown is like burnout. And to me, an imposter syndrome is the feeling of being inadequate in what it is that you're currently doing. The way that has an effect directly on me is that I try harder until I get until I try harder. I have that feeling generally until the moment that I get some indications that the efforts that I've been putting in are actually in line with the expectation. But it has to do with what you were speaking earlier, Earl, figuring out clearly what is expected of me, figuring out.
Yeah.
And from that perspective, I see it actually as a really positive emotion for me. I personally see it, it's a constant thing, but it actually puts me in emotion in an active state that I can do something about that.
But if we turn it around, because you say like, you know, I feel like this way when I'm doing something and it pushes me harder. But did you ever decline an assignment because you thought you couldn't do it? Because that is also, in my eyes, imposter syndrome, where you deny yourself maybe certain opportunities because you think you cannot do them. Like maybe you aspire to be a manager at one point, and then, you know, the opportunity arises to, you know, to get that role. But then you think like, nah, you know, I don't think I can do it. And then it definitely negatively impacts your career.
Yeah, that could be very well the consequence. But it's a decision like what you're describing is... Mm-hmm. is not purely a professional. It has to do with a lot how your complete life situation at that point is. Are you able to take up on a role like that? Because if you take a really big career step, that has definitely implications in your private life. So let's say your private life is in order and you have, you know, okay, there's a big promotion that I don't feel adequate.
Is it ever?
Sorry? Is it ever?
Is your private life ever in order?
Well, it can be.
Not mine.
Do you feel as an imposter in your private life?
I think that's a different discussion.
Every transition that you make in your professional career, that's a big jump, will have effect on your private life. So if you say, okay, I know this is going to be tough, but, you know, if I work the coming 3 months extra time and figure it out, I'm pretty sure I'll make it. But it comes with experience. It comes with more things that it depends also on the role you're offered. So.
Yeah.
It also depends on the person, because I do get what Wolf is saying, right? You can also flip the other end. The feeling that you have to do 80-hour work weeks or, I don't know, work throughout weekends just to make something happen so you can show, hey, I can do this.
Yeah.
Sure. It's part of it. Like, and the question is, do you want to do it or not? Is it worth to you doing that? Like, does that effort, does it bring you enough satisfaction, the growth that you want to achieve? If it's worth doing it, then
it's not just that, right? It's probably more like, it's more taking the negative emotions away. Sometimes it's easier to, I don't know, fight that and just let it go and then go for the 80 hours instead of actually thinking about it.
Do you guys think there should be more focus on these kinds of feelings in the workplace? Like actually talking about this kind of stuff?
In a way, there is. People are talking about this. For instance, you have this hero syndrome. The hero in the scrum team, for instance, that does everything at the latest minute, but he fixes everything. I think in the end, it's an effect of the imposter syndrome. At least I could explain it like that. I maybe not talking, but things like mobbing, for instance, could actually help you deal with this, because you see how other people work and you see they don't know everything. I still remember the first time I tried pairing, I was kind of like frozen. I need to Google, but can I do that?
Will I be judged like for Googling? I understand.
And it takes a while, and then you learn, okay, Googling is the way how you develop, but anyway,
No, but it takes a lot of guts, I think, especially if you get hired as an external consultant and then saying to the client, like, you know, I don't know if I can help you. I'm going to try, but I have some doubts here. Like, is that a conversation you need to have?
It depends.
It's a difficult question, I can see.
Well, not really. I'm trying to just word it right. If you're not an external consultant, let's say if you're an employee, and let's say you are in a position of a managerial position, or you are, you need to create an environment where you can have these discussions, and it goes by you being the person who is a coach or a manager or a leader or something, saying like the things when you screw up, when you are unaware, when you don't know, when you have doubts about yourself, and that makes the environment possible for people to share this, because otherwise people are going to fake it. So one of the things that happened very often with some of my previous colleagues, what I hear from stories, again, it's still happening, they're great work ethic, great professionals, but people work constantly overtime to make up deadlines on projects, and nobody knows. That's an extreme of this, like really an extreme.
Yeah.
And the discussion is like, no, it's you are not the one that needs, this is not your problem to solve. You don't always, they don't always feel that there is room to discuss this, whether that's actually true or not.
Yeah.
I think it's also important to understand how important what you're trying to accomplish really is in the grand scheme of things. I've had a few occasions where I worked my ass off or tried to make everything happen, and in the end,
it didn't really matter. Right.
Okay, yeah. Let's not do that again.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And one of the other things I can see sometimes with this whole imposter syndrome thing is, and I see that, you know, Sylvester, sorry to put you on the pedestal here.
Thanks, man.
It's a little bit of self-deprecation where, for example, you talked about giving this presentation earlier, and then you said, like, of course, I got a lot of flack, where you know, as if it's normal that you're getting negative feedback. So, you know, maybe sometimes, you know, you do a bit of, self-deprecation here, where you are not positive about yourself as you should be.
Well, I had to learn that the flag wasn't directed towards me, but more towards the idea.
And the subject itself.
To tackle things, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's something I had to realize. Yeah. I guess that's it.
But do you feel that you're, like, self-deprecating, like downplaying your achievements and saying, like, well, you know, this wasn't a big deal, or, oh, yeah, of course, there's going to be some negative things here and there? Or do you disagree?
Do I do that?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I should ask my colleagues here, Arno. Does he do that, Arno?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think you made a good observation. I can go examples if you want, but...
Okay. I can bring up a few examples as well.
No, of course.
I mean, it's okay, right? But because we all feel sometimes like that, right? At least I do as well. I think I also sometimes say it, like, man, sometimes clients find out how little work this is, like...
Sorry,
yeah, I was saying, like, sometimes if I think to myself, like, man, if a client finds out how little work this problem that they're having actually is, like, they're not even going to hire us, right? They're just going to do it themselves. And, you know, so that's what I'm also then downplaying the thing that I'm doing, because, like, maybe to me it's not much work, but maybe to someone else with, you know, that don't have that kind of expertise, it's going to be a whole lot of work and a lot of learnings. So it's hard to look from that perspective, like, because you only have your own perspective. And so, like I said, like, I feel like I'm downplaying myself from time to time as well.
Of course, but there's this joke, every now and then it pops up on LinkedIn, for instance. Someone has a problem, something with, a plane,
Mm-hmm.
They can't fix it. They spent lots of hours trying to fix it. And at some point, they hired a consultant. And within 5 seconds, he says, yeah, just turn this screw. It's not the right example, but sort of like along these lines.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get the invoice for fixing the actual problem. It's 15 cents. My experience, 10,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works. Because you also have fresh eyes. You come into a domain that you haven't seen before, and you basically think what they are no longer able to think.
Right.
Sorry, Pansy, you wanted to ask something. I heard my answer.
Yeah, so we sort of unsolicited gave feedback for Sylvester. I want you guys to give me feedback on how do you perceive me when it comes to this.
To the imposter syndrome, you mean?
Imposter syndrome, or self-evaluation.
Feedback on what?
What is it? What is it? The self-worthiness.
Well, I don't see any like negative signals. Like, to me, you're always like calm, collected, and you know, are able to get your thoughts out eloquently, pretty good. You think before you speak, and so to me, like on the outside, it seems like you have your shit together, and you don't suffer from imposter syndrome at all.
Yeah.
That's from my end. Okay. I don't know how Arno and Sylvester see it, but
Arno.
Yeah, I was thinking a bit about the conversations we had, for example, at the office Wednesday. And I kind of agree with Rolf. I think you just think a lot about it and experience them. That's how it seems. So from the outside, it seems like you don't have the issue. But I can imagine it's being a reason that you are a bit silent on certain points in time. Like in conversations just before, you were a bit silent, a bit thoughtful. Maybe that's the point where you actually experience the emotion and do something about it. But it doesn't show on the outside. To me, anyways.
The only example I can remember, I think that's the first time you did the presentation, invitation-based leadership, kind of like going out of your comfort zone at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like Rolf and Adam mentioned, it wasn't severe or something, but I noticed you had some doubts about it. Can you actually say things like this? Well, people, you know, because it was kind of like out of the box, especially for the client, I think, at the point. That's okay. The only example I can remember.
Yeah, I remember also you guys providing that feedback. But the truth of the reality is, so like what Rolf is saying, if I'm talking about domain that I know, I'm pretty confident and composed. But when it comes to, let's say, a new client, a new domain, a new work, there is a lot of paddling under the water that goes before I get to a point where I can be comfortable. Like, I, even now with the latest project that we did, like I spent so much work also often in evenings figuring out things or sometimes on weekends just to come to the point where I know that if I go in a conversation with the client, I know the story, that I know it's I don't have to, you know, fake it and say stuff that I feel confident. Because if I am relaxed in this conversation with the customer, it's going to relax the customer as well. Because if I'm nervous and start doubting, and then they're going to be also nervous and doubtful.
So the interesting part to me is that, does this drive for you to work in the evenings to understand the domain better come from fear, or does it come from I just want to do the best I can? Trying to do the best you can.
It's mixed.
So like there's no fear involved.
The ones are, well, so, well, what is trying to do the best you can? To me, that translates to fear that I'm not actually doing the best.
Ah, but come on, man. There's a difference between like being genuinely scared or like, okay, I'm going to do my best. Right? I mean, if you're going to grab a skateboard and go down the the roof of a building, like, you're going to be pretty scared. Like, not going to think like, oh, I'm going to do the best I can with this skateboard right here. Random example.
Well, yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. The funny thing is, I've listened to a lot of people speak at other podcasts on this topic, like professionals that you would think, and they have their shit together, and they all talk about feeling inadequate all the time, and that's a big motivator for them, and it is. And it is for me. It has a negative side.
It was as well with the. It's the same with André Hazes, right? Like in the documentary where he also was scared shitless every time he had to go on stage. Whereas, like, you know, thousands of people pay to see him sing live, but every time, man, he was so nervous and so scared.
It's a bit like Martin Fowler, no?
It's crazy. Yeah, Martin Fowler, good example. Yeah.
We asked for feedback.
Well, it keeps you focused.
Yeah, I mean,
I think we have a lag or something.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sylvester.
I said you were looking for feedback. I think because now I'm thinking about it, especially on the, for instance, latest project we worked on, and we worked on together. And I know I have a different background, and I can imagine that those bring up those feelings. So while I'm thinking about it now, I'm very good at doing that afterwards. So the feedback would be maybe share those feelings earlier instead of in the podcast. Mm-hmm. Because I never knew this about you, for instance.
Well, the feeling, I don't think, is something... Then, so you were suggesting share it earlier. I don't think that I mean, I don't perceive.
Well, you know
it
me, right?
I'm
the best person in this.
But, the best person in this?
It's not, but if two people have it. Well,
no, but
sharing
for me, to me is, I don't perceive. To me, I don't think it's. I don't see it as a negative thing. I have it. I notice it, and to me, I see it as okay. It's a motivation. I'm gonna go. It like keeps me awake and keeps me on my toes.
Yeah. So for you, it's fuel. For other people, it might be detrimental, but for you, it's beneficial. It gives you that edge.
Yeah, I think if I don't have it, I kind of stop caring. Yeah. I'm not caring about things. No, I don't. I miss it when I don't have it.
Right. No, because like we had this podcast with Thierry, right? About the struggle of public speaking, and he's like, if, I don't know if you guys follow him on Twitter, but he still shares like, having trouble with these kinds of things. And to me, that is, I mean, it's not just imposter syndrome, I guess, but like it definitely takes it to the extreme. So, you know, to you, Panche, it's, it motivates you to do better. But to Thierry, it's like, you know, actual, you know, terrified, super fearful. To, you know, it borders on depression. And, I don't know, right? I mean, I'm not a psychologist or anything, but it could definitely be a bad thing for people to have this imposter syndrome.
Well, you mentioned psychologists, but I do think if you have that amount of stress from this, then you should probably talk to someone about it.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I don't think that's, like, I think you put it really well. It's no longer an imposter syndrome, I think, after that. It's actually dealing with something much bigger beast. Because imposter syndrome should be... You have it, you feel it as something that's constructive, it helps you perform better. But if it becomes an obstacle for you to perform, then it's I think it's something else.
Yeah. Right. All right. I think we talked a lot about this. I don't know if you guys have anything else to add to this. Oh, I had one more question, actually, to all of you guys. So, you know, we've been in a lot of clients and we've done a lot of projects. Some of them were good. Some of them weren't not so good. But like, let's focus on the successes, like the real, really good ones.
All of them, yeah.
All of them, definitely. Like, did you attribute the success of those projects to yourself or to an external factor? Like when, you know, when we had a lot of success, would you say like, man, we were lucky here, or, oh man, these guys did something great for us so we could do it. So yeah, did you attribute the success to yourself or to the other party?
Shall I answer that? If I look back, I think I mostly put it towards the team, all the people involved in making it.
Yeah, but not to yourself then.
Not basically, no. Not always.
Right. Yeah, okay. What about you, Anna?
Oh,
if you want to punch it, it's fine as well.
Okay. So for me, it's always been, if I've gone through a successful period, for me, it's always been like, okay, how much of that was my contribution? And this is, you know,
and not
in a perspective that it's definitely not all me. And I'm wondering, okay, had it been under other circumstances, would this have been also success? And that's the part. That's the point that keeps me also all the time on edge. It's like, yeah, you know, maybe I got lucky.
Yeah.
So maybe I should keep trying hard. It's basically what the fundamental attribution error is talking about. It's just like attributing your own successes to yourself, but your own failures to something else. And I think I haven't. Yeah, try to have it mostly the other way around.
Man, that's pretty impressive, you know, all that super analytical, you know, being able to really analyze, like, oh man, you know, I had a part in the success or not. It's pretty good, man. I don't know if I can do that kind of stuff.
Just working from home stuff.
Yeah.
What about you, Rolf?
So what about yourself, Adolf?
Yeah, so I have a hard time when I'm part of a project and then or an assignment and then everything is done and successful. You know, I always say like, well, I just, you know, I played my part. I did what I had to do. But I never really think about like, what if I wasn't on the team? You know, because my assumption is if I'm not on the team, someone else is going to be on the team and the outcome is going to be the same. Which might not be the case, right? But so that's how I usually think about it. I don't really try and figure out what would have happened if I wasn't there. So I might be avoiding thinking about it.
Well, you should think about it more.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
It might also be, how do you say? Like because I'm Dutch, right? And Dutch people don't really brag too much, I feel. Like it's the Calvinistic nature of the Dutch people to not brag. So I just try to downplay, I guess, the achievements.
I think that's the easy way out of this conversation.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Oh yeah, it's my nationality, man. But like I said, I find it hard to really say, like, yeah, probably. But like, for me, it's hard to really toot my own horn and say, like, yeah, man, I fixed that shit.
Okay, so example, you were the host of this podcast for more than a year now.
Yeah.
Would it have worked without you?
I think so. Because then Panche would have probably picked up the...
Okay, I'm not saying anything, but let's ask Arno. What would happen if Rolf wasn't the host here?
Yeah, man. Then we got mediocrity. It just doesn't work.
I think some things would have worked, but it would have been different. And then that doesn't diminish the role of Rolf in what is happening right now. And I think this is the way we're seeing it. I don't think I've been thinking about this question now that we were talking about. I don't think it's the right question, because then you're assuming that, oh, if it wasn't for you, it would have been failure. It's like... That would mean that you are the key person in this whole thing. I don't think that's also fair.
Right.
Did Rolf have a positive impact on this podcast? I'll phrase it differently.
Most definitely. Perhaps, but like, I really liked how you as a host developed throughout the year. And I really like now more and more your insightful questions. Like when you prepare for a podcast to host it, like it's the beginning was more rusty, let's say. But now it looks, I really like it. You have a good and insightful story to start with. You have good questions. It's like, yeah, man.
Cool.
What I find interesting, I actually learned something new about you, Wolf, today. Because at some point I discovered you actually were on stage, on festivals, and you were actually the last person I would expect this from.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
So, I think it goes back to what I said earlier, we should just talk about it, maybe that helps.
Yeah, well, that's always the best advice, I guess. Just keep your conversation going. All right. Well, after all this positive talk about me, I think the best thing we could do is end on a high note and wrap it up here. Unless you guys have, something else to add here.
No, man.
All right. No, so, if you as a listener are also suffering from imposter syndrome, then please let us know and maybe we can give you some tips and tricks to overcome it. And...
I think we should be a bit more vocal about this. If you don't suffer from imposter syndrome, I think we need kind of like just give us a shout or something, right? Everyone has these feelings. I'm pretty sure of it. So just send us a mail or something saying, "Hey, yeah, I know these feelings."
Yep.
Let us know we're not the only ones, at least.
Exactly.
And then talk about the podcast a bit, or you want to invite them?
Yeah, if you want to talk about it, you're more than welcome to join. We're no psychologists, but I think we can help.
We were close, huh?
Yeah, exactly. We have a lot of experience with psychologists as well, so we know what we talk about. All right. I want to thank my colleagues for joining in and sharing some pretty personal stories, I would say. So thank you guys for opening up and sharing, sometimes it could be a bit embarrassing to talk about these things. So thanks a lot for sharing. And I want to thank the listeners as well for tuning in. And if you have any questions or remarks, then you know where to find us. It's podcast@4scouts.nl for the email or Twitter/4scouts. Thanks again, and see you guys on the next one. Bye-bye. All right.